Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I never stressed about music at all. It was always second nature to me. I'd always just made it and it always just seemed to be fine. All of a sudden it changed in an instant. But as soon as Noisy posted that thing, music became something different to me. And I think probably the easiest way for me to explain from where I am, where I was then to now, is that I think that this process has just been me trying to find my way back to what music was to me initially.
Hello and welcome to Hot Girls with me, Lex on the Decks. This is the podcast that explores the creative process and also the mechanics of the music industry to understand how you have success in it and ultimately address the gender imbalance that currently exists within it. This week, fresh off the back of his Colours show and his appearance on Charlie Sloth's Fire in the Booth, I'm joined by Jelani Blackman. Jelani's journey through music has been so interesting. I found this conversation really fascinating and really insightful. We talk a lot and he kind of demonstrates through his own career the importance of timing, the importance of things blowing up at the right time for you. We also talk a lot about relationship with a producer and how fundamental that can be on an artist, like getting to the right sound, getting to something that feels right for them. Jelani's got a load of new music on the way. So definitely, if you enjoy this conversation, check him out on socials and definitely watch his Colours show. It's super high energy. High recommend. Okay, let's go.
Ladies, gentlemen,
listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls with Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.
We're good. I wanted to ask about Colours, because he did that recently.
I did do that recently.
And how was that?
It was really, really good. Like, it was sick. I loved it. It's something that I've wanted to do for a while. And I feel like it just came at the right time, really, because everything else is moving in the right direction. It kind of was sparked off from a moment in lockdown. Yeah, it was sick. I miss performing as well, so I was like...
Yeah, it was quite performance-y, your energy on it. The important questions. Do you get to pick your colour?
No.
No?
They obviously know what they're looking for, so they're like, yeah, suggest, but like, we'll do the thing.
Yeah, red, we hear you. This is it, it's green. And you decided, so you didn't try and like co-ord your outfit, because some people, their outfit literally matches their background.
Like, I had a colour on my outfit that I felt would match the track and the vibe of the tune, but what they chose, I feel like, was better. So, again, it was clearly just them knowing what they're doing there for longer, so they know what they're talking about.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, cool. We'll I'm like, I don't know, just secretly.
Do you get multiple takes?
Yeah, as many as you want, but that was actually my first take.
Hey, professional.
Yeah. It's funny enough, the actual Hello tune is the first take that I did. It's just all one take. I feel like that's just the energy of the tune. Like,
it
just,
yeah. It's quite like, I guess, almost conversational.
Yeah.
In that. So we're going to go start of life.
Okay.
The first thing I wanted to ask you was where you grew up, because I thought Brixton.
Yeah.
But then I read in an interview West London. So I was like, yeah. Oh, is he South? Is he West?
It's both. It's the short answer. I spent the first 2 years of my life in Brixton. For me, I know it sounds weird, but actually were quite formative, because there was something that was a part of my life during that time that when I left Brixton, I never had again. So for me, like, those first 2 years were really significant in the relationship I had with my biological dad and the area that he came from, and my kind of connection to that side of me and that part of my life. So I still feel really strongly attached to Brixton. And whenever I went, I don't know, well, obviously it's psychological, but I always felt very emotional whenever I was there, because it had this inherent meaning to me. So even though it was a short amount of time, it's really significant. And then the rest of my life, I've been in Lover Grove, Westbourne Park. I feel very split. Whenever I'm in South, I'm always like, like, this feels like home. And then there are moments when I'm in West and I'm like, I have a soft spot for it because of where I grew up.
Yeah. But now you've left both.
I've left both. I actually, to be fair, I left as quickly as I could. I left West London as quickly as I could because it's tiny. You kind of, you've done all of your exploring by the time you get to being a teenager.
Mm.
So I left. I went to college in North London and then I moved to East London. So I've been in London. I'm just, in the realest sense of the word, like, London is my home. I feel like a Londoner.
Yeah. I grew up in Devon. Have you ever been to Devon?
I've been to Devon.
West London probably has the population of three times Devon. That's not a fact, people, but rumour. So when did you start making music?
I guess, obviously, there's like a distinction between making and playing.
Yeah. Start with casual, like, not when you're working, like, not professional at all, just...
Yeah. No, well, I mean, casually, I would have... The first experience I would have had making music was just, like, writing bars with friends in the park, just because it was, like, grime era. That was the music of the time. It was around, like, Boy in the Corner. It was just very, like, that was it. That was the sound. So that's the first time I ever wrote lyrics or anything like that. But I'd already been playing sax. I played sax since I was, like, 9.
Okay.
Yeah, I always thought it was because I was just really cool and I was just cool when I was 9. But my mom told me recently that it's because I like Lisa Simpson. So, which I guess is not cool, but like that was, I just thought I was sick. I was like, yeah, what, you decided to play sax when you were 9? But that's not what happened.
She was really good as well.
She was really good. She's a lot better than I was.
How far did you go on the sax? Like, were you taking grades?
Yeah, I still play up to grade 8.
Hey.
Yeah. I play live when I decide I want to.
So when you first started writing bars, and they were like grime bars, what was the lyrical content like?
What was the lyrical content I was writing when I was 11, 12? Oh my God. I can't even quote it. There's bars I can remember, but you don't want to know. Just... It wasn't very, what's the words? Elegance on the right events. They weren't good.
They weren't good.
They were good for what they were, but they weren't good. They weren't insightful. There was a lot of girls talk, from what I remember. Girls talk.
Mainly girls talk. But 11 and 12, it was probably just like, girls chasing me or whatever. I don't know what the perception of a 11, 12-year-old.
Yeah, I'm a bad MC. Girls always chasing me. Like that.
Yeah. And then how did you go from there to getting to a place where you wanted to start actually recording things?
Again, it was quite casual. One of my friends was a producer, one of the best producers I've ever actually known. I've been really lucky in my life and career, I guess, that I've always been around really talented people. And so I didn't take it for granted, but like it was never like a decision. He just had the equipment to record stuff. It was still super basic, like computer mics and stuff, but... That's what we did, like, for fun. That's what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
yeah, amongst other things. Probably the most constructive.
That was the good thing. That was a nice thing.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a London thing as well. Like, it's such a creative city that people seem to do creative things in their spare time. So you started, as you say, like it was quite an organic process and you were just working with your friends. And then you decided to put your first EP out. And then was there like a point where you started taking it seriously, or was it still just kind of like, yeah, we'll just keep making stuff and see what happens?
Nah, my musical history is so long, so I'm going to breeze over like a section of it. But it kind of went from me just doing it like organically, just because I was chilling with my friends from when I was like 11 to 15, 16, going to college and kind of broadening my horizons musically, really. Like, I became really good friends with this guy who was a guitarist, but he was like an indie guitarist. And then this other singer who was like an R&B pop singer. You might know, her name's Rena Sawayama. And stuff going, we made a band, but it was a really interesting experience. I loved it. I say interesting, like it wasn't fun, it was sick, but that was my first kind of dipping my toe into music and it as an industry. Then I went to uni and Leeds took over my life.
You went to Leeds?
Yeah, Leeds. It took over. All I really cared about, like, just the uni experience. Like, I still was making music, but it took a massive backseat. But funnily enough, I met the people that I then went on to make music with now. But at the time, I didn't have the same kind of focus, or I wasn't really thinking about it as a career. It's because I'd always done it as Reflex. So I just carried on doing it as Reflex, but I wasn't putting like lots of time in. I wasn't really pushing myself until towards the end. And then towards the end of these, I met two producers. One's called Jacob Manson, one's called Fred Gibson. Both of them incredibly talented. Both of them were always going to be in the music industry professionally. Like, they are. Jake was part of a group called Blonde, so that was what he did. But he was a producer, but he went into like the kind of and the artist role as a thing. And then Fred continued as a producer, and he has gone on to do lots of stuff. He produced all of Ed Sheeran's last album, or pretty much in lots of ways. So they both were just doing bits.
Yeah.
I met both of them at Leeds. And over the last however many years, like kind of dipping in and out, I started the process with Fred, carried it on with this guy called Tom, and now I'm back with Jake, which is amazing. Like, it's so nice to be with someone that like I have that history. And we've seen each other's musical journeys, and it kind of just clicked at a really important time for me when I really needed music to click. And yeah, we got in and everything just started to run. Giving the overview, so when we get into stuff, like, you know why I'm like dipping back and forth.
The overview is good. It's good. It's like giving me a sense. So then you actually started making music properly.
Yeah.
And then what was the process of actually putting your first EP out? 5/8 was your first EP?
1 to 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good there. Yeah. Very good. How did it have 4 tracks?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's genius. No, you know what? It was it's because at the time I made a track with Fred, which was just, it was a tune. I really liked it. And there was no like idea about follow-up. It really wasn't done in a professional sense, to be honest. It was still very organic. Like, we did all of the things that needed to be done, but there was no like overarching plan or like we do this and we do that. It literally, we had the tune, I played it to one of my friends in the room with someone that worked for Noisy at the time, and he was like, oh, in fact, he didn't even work for Noisy, he was like, oh, my friend works for Noisy, like I could probably get this on the page for you. This is when blogs were still like a thing.
Was this when Noisy was first making all of those videos? So they did like, but they made loads of documentaries, like the Snoop Lion one.
Yeah. Noisy was a thing. Like, it was that era of blogs and SoundCloud. Like, it was then. And literally what that happened was, I said, yeah, all right, cool, that sounds good. Didn't have anyone to do PR. Like, didn't really know what PR or press was or anything like that. I was like, cool, just take the tune. Gave it to them. And they did an article on it, and it just blew up. And I was like, fuck. And then everything just snowballed. And what I realized really quickly was I didn't, like, as much as I love the tune, I didn't actually want that to be my sound. It was a bit of a weird realization, because I had this song that I really liked and it was cool, but it was quite neo soul. 23, it was true, like, kind of, people were like, oh, it's like Frank Ocean and other stuff. And I was like, it's all great things, but like, it wasn't really what I wanted, because I really felt like there was more. I was experimenting, yeah, which is how 1-4 came about. Because I was like, okay, cool. Well, these are just the first four songs that I'm going to release. There was no like EP ideology or thinking behind it. It was literally, yeah, I want to put together a body of work, four songs that I really like. And that's where that first EP came from.
And those are the four. It's weird, that thing, isn't it, of people wanting to say what you're like to describe you, but then it was a bit boxed in.
Definitely.
At the stage.
As much as I'd love to sing like Frank Ocean, I definitely don't. I felt like that was too high of a bar to set for me to like, they'd be like, all right, cool, like I'm going to make like an R&B thing, because that's just, it's not.
It's true. I always get really confused when people like describe artists that they're working with or representing with, and they're like, he's sort of like a Kendrick kind of, I'm like, don't do that to them. <That's>...
But it's funny, it's a really UK thing, I think. It happens in other places, but because the industry is smaller, what you find is there's a lot less development time. So if you have a tune that does really well, people just latch on, and you get all of these things that you probably don't want or need yet in terms of your process and the musicality of what you're doing. Some people are like just like that straight away because they have that kind of, I guess, lane that they knew they wanted to fit in. But I think lots of people, and you find it with a lot of like artists that develop over time and get better, like Kendrick as an example, is they have this incubation period before they blow, and they get to do it because America's so much bigger that like it starts off bubbling in their town, in their city, then their state. And by the time it goes nationwide, they're pretty established and confident in their sound. Yeah. Whereas you're in the UK and you're from London, like do one tune and everyone's like, ah, mad. And then you have to you're playing catch up for the rest of the time. You see it happen all the time with artists. Like they'll put out a tune, it'll blow. And then the next two, three tracks, like it kind of feels like they're either doing this a little bit. Mm. And then sometimes, luckily, if they work it out quick enough, they do that again. But like rarely do you find, pop artists obviously are different, but yeah, with a lot of independent, kind of more left-leaning UK artists, it's tricky when your track blows.
Yeah. But then this is funny, because I would think that you're lucky if your track blows, because I feel like in today's climate, there's so much noise. It's like one of the hardest things is actually cutting through the noise. So if you're starting to get a bit of people talking about you, then I would think that's only a good thing, but I hear your point about...
It definitely is. It's just all about timing.
Yeah.
You want people to clock on when you're right at your like the peak of where you want them to hear you.
Yeah. So then you can go like, bam, just like lay down. That's nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what you want.
When did you get signed? Like, what was that process like?
That's also what was mad. Like, I literally got signed based off that one track. So then I just got thrown straight in. And again, this is something that happens to people. Like, it sounds great. And if you're working independently as an artist, you want that support. You want the backing of being like, okay, cool, let's take it to another level. There are loads of things that are kind of presented to you that seem like they're going to be beneficial. And then you find yourself in a deal and you're like, oh, how? The first label I sent to was actually in LA. They heard the track. That's how like much it went, that people heard about it in LA.
Yeah.
Like he's obviously something worth picking up on.
Yeah. That must have been weird, because I guess that's people having worked creatively with people that you knew really well, and then all of a sudden you've got people coming into the picture who you don't really know and you don't necessarily know what they're about.
Yeah. Do you mean the guys in LA?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think they came over. I'm pretty sure I met them before we like locked anything in. And then I went out to LA for a bit, which should have been cool, but I hated it.
That's what I was going to say. Were you like, making it, living the dream?
Yeah, initially I was like, woo-hoo. Well, I had some cool experiences, definitely, but like, I didn't really like the vibe of LA, to be honest.
Mm.
It wasn't for me. And I think if I went now, because of the space that I'm in musically, I think I would just be like, boom, 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 right, cool. But at the time, I was still very much in like the just the numbers phase of my writing. So like there were really disparate songs that I was coming out with, and some of them were cool, but they sounded completely different to the thing I would make the next day. And that process actually went on for like 4 years, maybe. I had enough of them that enough of them were good, But like but really it was just a process of, okay, just make music and see what happens and see what you like and see how you feel, which is super indulgent of me. So indulgent. It's so indulgent. And I did it for 4 solid years. Where I just, like, there was one point when I was sessioning nearly every day with a different producer. And this was four days a week. Like, it was a proper job. This is when I first signed to Virgin. So after halfway through my deal with the LA label, things were still like kind of running, but like this other imprint on Virgin were like, oh, we're interested in kind of picking this up. But because the LA label didn't want to let me go.
Picking him up. Sure. Yeah. Pick me up if you want.
Fun, I guess.
I'm in LA. I'm just making music.
Yeah. But yeah, they were just like, oh, halfway through my deal. So it was then got all like complicated. And the thing about deals as well is that they're horrible for momentum. Like they can just slow down anything that you're doing. Like, and that's what happened initially, is that this song started doing well. And then I got involved in this label thing. And like, it was then like 4 months before anything was followed up with. And it was all a little bit, yeah. The industry is tricky. There's lots of things to navigate. But the main thing is that during that period of time when I first signed to AMF, I was firstly between two labels and two countries, and also still wasn't really like settled on what I wanted out of music, who I wanted to be, like what I wanted to say. I was just making it. So that's the 5 to 8 EP, which for me feels a little bit like the Lost EP. Not many people know that. Like, and there are some tunes on there that I love, but like I've got a track on there that's called Try, which is pretty much a ballad. And then I've got another track on there called Follow, which literally sounds like I made it in a dungeon. And it's mad. I mean, and I like the contrast, but that was very much like who I was at the time.
Well, I was running, I was like, was he a little bit heartbroken when he was writing this? There's some moves, like some feels going on.
Yeah, always feels. Always. But yeah, so that's kind of where, I think 5 to 8 is where I consolidated that, ended that process even. Like I knew that at the end of that EP, I was done with doing just songs and just kind of like, I was like, I want to have a sound now. Like I want to have an identity. Mm-hmm. I want like someone to listen to a tune and be like, okay, cool, that sounds like Jelani. Like, and then I did that with following the EP. It's called Lockjaw, which to me was, yeah, it was almost like a coming of age a little bit in terms of my sound, and
yeah,
not necessarily lyrically. And I think it was interesting. I went sonically and then I went lyrically. I did Lockjaw. Lockjaw, I feel like, sounds like me, like all the way through. It's consistent. It's still got lots of different vibes going on, but it sounds like me. And then I did Average Joe the following year.
I feel like your sound is very unique. It's not like, I wouldn't really know like how to, like, how would you describe your sound? Would you be able to?
I don't know. I can, but like, I would, if I could avoid it, I would.
Yeah.
No, but I don't think like many artists like to describe their sound too much. Like some do. I mean, like if you're a drill artist, they're going to be like, yeah, I made drill. Or like if you're a pop singer or an R&B thing. But I feel like if you're a rapper, especially nowadays, I was working as well through a period of time when being a rapper and a singer weren't as easily accepted as the same thing. Like you had to say one or the other. They rapper, like people wouldn't be surprised if you sung on the tune, like if something like, but I feel like when I've first had to start making distinctions, and last year I had a proper moment because they put me on the cover of Rap UK on the Spotify playlist. I was like, fuck yeah. So I don't have to call me a singer anymore, fucking hell. But like, I went for like 3 years of being so are you a singer or are you a rapper? I'm like, does it matter? Music was why are you so interested in which one I am? But now I just say rapper.
Yeah.
And I sing. But I feel like it all fits in the same.
So people are like, oh, who's sung on this? And you're like,
this is. Yeah. It is. Well, watch. I don't even know. Watch when I drop, whip out the sex.
Yeah. That would be quite a lot for your breath.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, as a performer, it might be quite a challenge, but if you're up for it. So when you're doing all this recording, what's the label paying your studio time?
Do you know what? From the time that I made music as a 12-year-old with my friends to now, I've never paid for an hour of studio time.
Oh my God.
I know, it's insane. But like, I've just been lucky because it was always organic and it was never like, oh, let's get into like a session to like record stuff. It was always just me chilling with friends or like, I don't know, it just felt very natural. It wasn't like a, okay, cool, you're going to come in and pay X. Like, studio's so expensive.
Yeah.
They put me in once. They put me in studio once. Universal put me in once. And it was so expensive, man. Like, mad.
Yeah. Well, that's why there's loads of studios now opening up, like Pirate and stuff, that are so much cheaper. And they're so good. I think it's so good.
Yeah.
It just, like, democratizes the process. So when you were working that time, like when you were working on Lockjaw, as you say, when you really, like, got comfortable with your sound and in a good space, were you working with the same producers throughout that process to, like, establish that sound?
I was working with one guy specifically, this guy called Tom. I call him Staff. He's Staff Music, like, but...
It's kicking off in your house.
I was working with Staff. A lot. I actually worked with him the most during that period of time. So there was like I feel like we supported each other, really. Like, we developed each other. He was kind of starting out in terms of production. I was definitely at a point when I just needed one person to be with, because that's what I feel like all the best rappers have, like, a really strong relationship with a producer. Sometimes you get people that can just, like, jump on beats, but I feel like that's after they have found a kind of sound through working with one person. And I think I started that, but then didn't finish it with Fred. But then I started working with Staff, and I really had the time to, like, dig in. I stopped going to, like, four different sessions a week. I was just seeing him, really, and, like, kind of working out what things wanted to sound like.
It's really sweet, because it's like all the language is like, we were just seeing each other so many times a week.
That's my guy. There's a really, like, emotional relationship. Well, because as you would imagine, it's music, it's creating stuff. So, like, some of the times, like, yeah, thinking back, it is kind of magic what you end up experiencing with the person that you make that music with. Lots of the time, it's just you and them. So, like, when you're getting excited, you're excited together, and then you go away, you're like, it's sick. I'm so grateful, and I'm so, I just have a lot of love for the people that I've ever worked with. There are a few. There's another producer called Quez Darko, who again, sick, went on. He produced for Slow Tie, that, again, I was just really lucky to work with. And he actually is someone who always had that little element that I was missing, and it took a lot. I guess I'm complex, but like, it took a lot of different people and moments for me to kind of crystallize what it was. And then it went from Lockjaw, where the sound was right, to then having a really, if I'm honest, bad experience with the label that I was with, where, like, definitely don't need to get into it, but like, I was deeply, deeply unhappy to the point where, like, I couldn't really make music. I was crippled. I was angry. Just, yeah, it was bad, like, consistently all the time as well. And I'm struggling quite a lot. And then I found my way out, basically. And when I found my way out, Jake was there. Yeah, he was there. And I was just, and he obviously had during this period of time, had his own experiences in the industry. So, like, and we'd met each other before either of us had gone in. So, like, it was then nice to come out, to kind of be out the other side and be like, yo. And then, literally the energy that I had then, I was feeling reinvigorated. And we wrote Nobody's Son, which is the tune which kind of just made everything run. Like, for me, that was what I wanted out of 20 to 3, really. Like, that's what it should have been. But you don't get to choose that. Nobody's Son was my, like, okay, cool. And that was March last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much from then, like, it's just been nonstop. For me personally, like, I've been growing as an artist, lyrically, musically. The energy and momentum has been building since then. And I feel like it was like a reset, basically. And I put out the EP that is my favorite EP, which is Average Joe. I put that out at the end of last year. And that there was a lot in it that I'd never managed to say before, certain layers being stripped back. And I was just like, okay, wow, like, cool. There is something to say. There is a reason to be doing this.
Mm. Yeah. That's lovely. Thanks for sharing that with me, with all of us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you were, you might not want to talk about it too much, so obviously don't if you don't want to. When you were in that situation where you were trying to leave the label, do you think it was mutual that like you weren't happy? Do you think they were also like, nah, this isn't working?
Yeah, if it wasn't mutual, I wouldn't have been able to get out like I did. Right. Because that's how labels work. They'll keep you even if you hate them, if they feel like...
It's weird.
But like, it wasn't easy. It was still definitely the case that like, I had to kind of really, really confirm that that's what I wanted. There was no way around it. I just needed to be out of that situation. I knew that as a fact. But yeah, it wasn't the easiest. It wasn't easiest to do. But yeah, but do you know what? I have no bad blood. I don't resent anyone, especially no one individually. I feel that about life in general, to be honest. Like people are usually just, even individuals are usually just caught in either situations or experiences. That's how people grow and build. No one was a bastard.
I know. I was saying that to someone the other day and they were like, no, I think some people are still cunts.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying in that specific situation that no one was, but also like generally like those people that are, because some people are just kinds of right, but when those people are, it's really fun. I'll give you a great example. So yesterday I went to the seaside with my mum, which was like, it was really nice. It was so like, it was just a really nice day.
Like Pebble Beach,
it was Broadstairs.
I have never been.
Yeah, neither have I, but it's...
You said it like everyone goes.
Like it was mad because I went and firstly, someone recognised me, which was wild because it was Broadstairs. Like, and he's like, oh, like I saw your colours. I was like, yeah, and I was to take a photo. And then I saw, you know, Chicken Shop Date, you know, Amelia?
Yeah.
yeah, but I saw her, but she went to my college. I was like, what the fuck are you doing here? He was like, came down for the day. I was like,
what are you doing here?
Like, Broadstairs is just lit, bro.
Where's that? But,
yeah. It's bubbling. But, sorry, tangent. I was there and bumped into this guy. I didn't bump into him. He fucking cornered us, me and my mum, and was just ruthlessly insistent on having this conversation with us that we clearly didn't want to have. Okay. And like, it was annoying. And I could see my mum was getting annoyed. I was annoyed, but not that annoyed. But he wasn't letting us go. And then we tried to like move and get away, and he was just doing this weird back and forth. And then we were like, okay, we're going to go that way. And he's like, oh yeah, it's just so. Said something about his wife and how he lost her last year. And it's so funny how just all of a sudden, like, someone can say one sentence and it just reframes everything that was annoying about what they were doing. Not that you didn't understand, like, it wasn't the end of the world, but like, it just can just suddenly be like, oh, okay, you're annoying, but you're lonely. And like, you lost your wife last year. You've probably just gone through a crazy 4 months of having no one around in isolation and lockdown. So yeah, it's kind of inconsiderate that you are cornering us to have a conversation, but maybe you can be forgiven. But yeah, but I feel that that's the case with a lot of people that can't surround us.
No, I think
just dickheads, I've known that from a very young age.
Some people just are, but no, you're right. A lot of the time, if it's like an interaction that you have, yeah, you shouldn't presume because you don't know what their day's been like.
Yeah.
I do believe that if people are causing you grief, it's often because they are grieving or they're dealing with pain themselves in some way.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your interview with Clash,
yeah,
one of the things you said was that the best thing I can tell you about music is don't overcomplicate it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like a nice kind of like recent reflection or learning? Like, do you think you used to stress out about music more?
Yeah, worst. Way, because it's just in my nature to overanalyze stuff anyway. So combine that with, I think, a lot of other stuff that was going on and the way that I was making music. Because as I said, like, I never stressed about music at all. It was always second nature to me. I'd always just made it and it always just seemed to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it changed in an instant. It changed as soon as that, I don't know what point you would say it, but as soon as Noisy posted that thing, music became something different to me. And I think probably the easiest way for me to describe that, explain from where I am, where I was then to now, is that I think that this process has just been me trying to find my way back to what music was to me initially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to find a way out of something once you're in it. So I think pretty much I had no idea what was going on. So like, from when that Noisy thing happened to, I would say, Nobody's Son, where it was like just catharsis and just like a release. It was just like, fuck this. Like, I've just, this is what I've been doing my whole life. I don't understand why I've been thinking about it so much.
Mm.
And it reset me. It was a click. But that whole period of time was me trying to find that again. It was horrible. I hated it. I hated the feeling of something that was so simple to me being so complicated and convoluted and stressful, really, if I'm honest. Really made me really unhappy making music for a long time.
Yeah, that is not the way it should be.
No.
Okay, so are you back in a space now where like music's the thing you do for fun, if you know what I mean?
What
else do you do for fun? That's like a question that I don't even know who phrases stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't know, and who could legitimately answer it on a public podcast? People like, it's
okay.
You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah.
Watch football and just hang out with your mates.
Watching Netflix.
Do you actually watch Netflix?
No, I'm being sarcastic. I do watch Netflix, but that's not what I do for fun. I do that to fill in the gaps in between what I do. Make music. I do love films, though. Films are my controversial, but I may love films Nah, not more. It doesn't have to be a competition. I do really love films, though. And it's been like my love for as long as music has been. I just love the escapism and everything about it. Like, I don't ever feel happier than when a film is about to start that I've really wanted to watch.
Really?
Never. Yeah, that's my happiest moment.
The thing that really stresses me out about films, I can never pick one.
Yeah.
I have to be like given the film or like told what we're going to see or like what the thing is. Otherwise, I'll spend half an hour looking at trailers and then I'll be like, oh, it's bedtime.
Yeah. I feel like I hear this a lot from people. It is difficult though, especially now because there's so many options.
Right.
It doesn't feel like they've made it any easier. And also, do you know what was one of my demons is that I was just so indecisive. So indecisive. So I just found it really hard when I was complicating music to like land on a decision, especially because I felt like I could do different things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. In that situation, do you tend to trust other people's opinions? I don't think I do. I think I like have to know for myself, but.
Yeah. Well, I think what was probably again, some kind of like level of cognitive dissonance was that I don't trust anyone, but I'm very willing to open. Sorry, I'm very open to hearing what other people have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I trust more people now, but it takes a while. I've just experiences in life have kind of made me feel like I don't want to do that. So it takes a lot for me to trust someone. But if I do, then I really do. Yeah, I feel like that was tricky for me because I was really open to being like, oh, well, you think this and you think that and all right. But at the same time, I didn't really have faith in their direction or ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was I ended up in a middle ground a lot of the time where I was listening to people but not agreeing or doing it because I wasn't 100% sure about what I wanted to do.
Right.
But really trusting what they wanted to do.
Yeah. So wasn't that helpful?
No, not at all. It wasn't.
So we live and we learn.
We do. Do you know what? And that's the only thing you can do, isn't it? You have to, we move.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can say.
Absolutely. It's just all part of evolution, isn't it? It's like your evolution as an artist and a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. In terms of my mum as well, just touching it, I evolved a lot during that period of time in terms of my relationship with my mum, which has been really, really nice and great. But I feel like that was the final thing of me being an only child. And her being an only child and us coming from being very individual, but needing to find our own lanes to be able to be together and be, yeah, that also is happening. But tumultuous time.
Yeah, it's nice when you come out of those periods of time though and you know good things come from it. You know why you needed to go through it.
It's the best. I wouldn't trade it.
No.
I wouldn't trade it. Easy life, boring.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, so this is on my mind because I watched this Netflix documentary. Have you seen the social dilemma?
No.
Okay, it's called The Social Dilemma, and it's basically a documentary about social media and how they're sort of manipulating us, kind of like the Cambridge Analytica Trump scandal. But it just goes deep into it. Because in P2P, you had that little clip. I was just going to ask about your relationship with the internet and social media, force for good or pain in the ass? What do you think?
Ooh, ooh, ooh. It's a complex one. Do you know what? This might not answer your question, but this is how I feel about everything at the moment. Because the reason I'm answering it like this is because I literally couldn't condense how I feel about social media without spilling over into so many other elements of the world at the moment that it wouldn't do it justice. So I'm just not going to touch it as a thing specifically. But what I will say is that it feels like at the moment, lots of things in the world are a reflection of human nature more so than the thing itself. And that goes from government to social media to race, politics, gender, all of those things to me speak more about the internal battle that we are having because what it means to be human now is so different to what we are capable and have been conditioned to deal with, that those things are almost symptomatic of what we're going through, as opposed to social media being like a force for good or a force for evil. Like, social media is whatever we're going to be. So until we work out what we're going to be, it doesn't, it's kind of irrelevant what social media is. And the same goes with politics and and everything else that you look at. I feel like our global issues at the moment. That's how I feel.
I agree, actually. But then maybe like humans, we need reining in a bit.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think we've crossed the threshold of where we're at in terms of like humanity and where we're going to end up, because there are too many factors now that are out of our control, that we actually, it's kind of like being on a chessboard and with a grandmaster and the pieces are already set. I'm not saying anyone's controlling it. I'm just saying that we're like six moves ahead of something that is inevitable, I feel personally.
Okay, quick questions.
Yeah.
Well, I say quick. I'm not very good at quick questions. Best piece of career advice you've received?
Oh, it has to come from you.
A lyric that's meant a lot to you.
You know what? This is just because this is the most recent lyric that I like.
It's good to promote the new stuff.
It's not even that meaningful, but it's just sick. And it just reminds me of like what I would have loved to have had as a bar when I was younger. Again, like, this is like going back to it. But the bar is, it's in the forward move of rash like markers, pitch black with a kick back, get clotted. So it's, all right, let me, how I break it down. So it's only two lines, but there's so much in it. So Marcus Rashford is a football player.
Yeah, and him.
Yeah. Like, usually, so that's the thing. On the other side, there's like what people do when they go on out, basically on shootings and stuff. And like a common car, like Fords are like a common car. So like it's at nighttime and like Clyde being shooting, guns have kickbacks on them. But like if you break it down, it's in the Fords moving rash like Marcus, pitch black. The kickback, get Clyde. I love it. It's just that's my favorite lyric in the moment.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to ask, when are you the happiest? But you did already say just before a film starts.
Yeah. Or when I'm about to get on stage.
Those 2021.
Yeah, I know, man.
Before you get on stage rather than after?
Afterwards, I'm sad that it's over. I want to go again.
And finally, two more things. One, what do you look for in people close to you? Like, what qualities do you really cherish?
I have to, like, the people that I know are quite different. So like, this sounds really vague, but just energy. Like, I've from a really young age, because I am an only child, like all the people that I've had around me are just like family. Like, people that I choose to be around me are, yeah, fam. So I read off energy. I'm really good at working out people that I want around me and people that I don't. So yeah, there's nothing specifically. I know some terrible people that I love, so like, yeah, but they have good energy and like they have good hearts, so that's what I like. Good hearts, that's what I look for.
Okay, and is there one song that you listen to? I haven't really asked too much about your musical influences. I'm just gonna ask this. What song is there, one song that you listen to, or like one artist that you listen to that people just wouldn't expect at all?
I like Simon and Garfunkel. I'm glad that you didn't ask me any of that. I find that stuff boring. everybody musical influences are kind of like, I don't know, especially if you're from London, you just listen to stuff. I think most people grew up.
Yeah, there are certain people who everyone says Simon Garfunkel is new.
There you go.
And finally, what's next? Like, what's on the horizon? Obviously, weird time.
There's loads. I'm really excited, to be honest. I'm actually thinking, like, what can I say and what can't I say? So just keep your eyes out. Go and follow, go listen to the track I got out at the moment called Hello. There's still more stuff around that coming. And there's some other things I can't say.
Good stuff's coming.
But good stuff is coming.
What are your favorite handles to share stuff? Are you sharing on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, all of the above?
I'm active.
He's active.
Jelani Blackman.
Jelani, thanks so much for giving us your time and sharing your musical journey.
It was good. It was fun.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Bye. What up, Lex?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.